Today is April 10th, 2013, and this is episode number 199 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, rootinest, hootinest rider in the Wild West. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Oh, that tops where I was going to go with this, because I was thinking, hey, it's breakaway day. But then I realized, no, that's 1999, not 199.
Breakaway day?
Didn't you ever watch Space 1999?
I did, but you've watched it recently, haven't you?
Well, season one and the first couple episodes of season two.
Yeah, it's been probably 25 years, maybe 30 years for me, maybe 35 years for me. I was definitely a kid.
Yeah, good times.
Good times. Yeah.
September 13th, 1999.
I'm in that camp, man. The 70s sucked.
Okay, well then, how about if I temper that with season one of Space 1999? Good times.
All right, fair enough. I'll take that.
All right.
I'll take that. And for my ridiculous title to everyone, I apologize.
The visual that went in my head as you rolled out your title.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Well, silliness aside, what am I saying, silliness aside? This is the Apple Context Machine. But there's no putting aside of the silliness.
No, we're not silly people. This is a very serious news program, news analysis program, and we never antologue.
We've done 199 episodes, counting the episodes that Ricky and then you and Ricky did, and I'm thinking you never listened to any of them.
And your point is,
yeah, fair enough. Oh, good times.
Yeah. By the way, on the antilog, have you been able to get that thing housebroke yet?
No, it is not. It's a bit of a mess, to be honest.
I'm really glad you're keeping that thing on your side of the studio.
If you didn't see it, Jeff drew the antilog up since the last episode and posted it as an Instagram pic. You want a link to that in the show notes?
I'll make sure we have a link in the show notes. Absolutely.
Excellent. And if you're not sure what the antilog is, refer to last week's show.
Right. Which would be episode number 198.
Yes. Speaking of which, next episode is episode 200. Seems like a big deal.
It does, especially for us.
Especially for us, yeah. It's been
a long time coming.
40, 50 years in the making.
Yeah, but you know, each one of those episodes leading up to 200 was crafted with love.
It was. It's true. Well, we have a couple of topics today, maybe a third one, but we won't mention the third one in case we don't get to it. The first one is going to be new data showing that iOS still has all the app downloads and all the app usage and all the app monies. And then the second one is the Facebook phone.
Now, you say first and second, but I say throw caution to the wind and let the dice decide which one is first.
Right. I do. Yeah, that's true. I was listing. Yeah, true enough. My use of first and second could be misleading because we do have the D&D dice. Although today we're going to go old school. We're going to roll a 20-sided die that's just 1 through 10 twice because that somehow makes sense. But then we have the accompanying 6-sided die to determine whether or not that 1 through 10 is a is 1 through 10 or 11 through 20. Because, you know, that's how we roll here at the Apple Context Machine.
Wait, I've got to take notes. Wait, two die, carry the one. Oh, man, this new math hurts.
Yeah. Did you ever do that, by the way?
New math?
No, the 20-sided die that has 1 through 10 twice.
No.
Oh, I see.
The 20-sided die that I was exposed to was now I don't know, traditional or special, because it's not the same as what you have.
Well, now you, it's all the 20-sided dice that I've seen have 1 through 20 on them. And but when the basic set, the D&D basic set came out, which I do still have, the 20-sided die had 1 through. Okay, I may be making that up, but because it may not have had a 20-sided die, it may have just been a 10-sided die. I can't remember. Anyway, when I was a kid, the 20-sided dice had 1 through 10 on them twice. And if you were really, really diligent, you would get model paint and you would paint one set of 1 through 10 one color and one set of 1 through 10 another color. And so that way, you know, like in, and then you would designate, you know, like blue would be 1 through 10 and red would be 11 through 20.
I think your D&D games were a lot more elaborate than mine.
Oh, probably. But if you didn't have your 20-sided die painted in such a way, you
painted.
Yeah, but I just said you.
Sorry, a Munster's Ink reference.
Oh,
carry on.
You used a 6-sided die, and if you rolled, so you'd roll the 2 dice together. 1 through 3 meant that it was 1 through 10, and 4, 5, and 6 meant that it was 11 through 20.
Now, why wouldn't you just use a 2-sided die for that instead of a 6-sided die?
It's called a coin.
Yes, I know.
Because they didn't ship the coin with the dice at the time. Otherwise, I'm sure we would have. So anyway, here we go. We're gonna do. Let's do 1 through 10. Will be the app usage.
1 through 10 is app usage.
11 through 20 is the Facebook phone.
Yes.
Facebook home phone. No ET references. Here we go. We have 17. 17 would be, we're going to start with the Facebook phone.
Sounds like it.
All right.
And
boy, that was just elaborate. That was just so much work. Let's just take all that out so that we don't burden any of our listeners with any of that crap.
I think we should. Or I'll just record another little clip we can drop in at the beginning. And I'll say, this is episode number 199 of the Dungeons & Dragons Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. There, now you've got that bit. You can just drop it.
Excellent. 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 All right. So what happened
Facebook.
On, what day was that?
That was, let's see, this is Wednesday. So that was
Monday or was it Thursday?
Thursday, I believe.
Yeah. I think. Wait, God, did we go all the way back? Anyway, it was last week.
Yeah, it was last week. It was after we recorded last week. Yes.
Yeah, it was definitely on Thursday. Right. So the rumor ahead of time was that Facebook was going to be releasing a quote-unquote Facebook phone.
Right. And what they actually released, I think, is much better from a business standpoint and a strategic standpoint than a Facebook phone. They released a set of apps for Android that will turn your Android phone into a Facebook phone.
Right. So essentially they can make all your Android device are belong.
All your Android are belong to us.
Yeah, or them. That's the case maybe.
Yes.
And it is, but it's actually not a set of apps, it's just the one app.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's an app that bundles together what previously had been a set of apps. There we go.
Yeah. And it's called Facebook Home. And it does make a lot more sense than it actually makes orders of magnitude more sense than Facebook releasing its own phone or its own phone OS, because this way they don't need to. They get most of the same benefits without having to go through the hassle.
Right. And the way they put this together, whether or not you like Facebook, I think was actually really kind of clever, because they kind of flopped the focus when you're using your phone from being selecting various apps to do various things to being a social device where you can also go and use other apps if you need to. And for so many people, your smartphone is a social interaction device. So why not have an interface that caters to that? And that, I think, is the core of what Facebook Home is from a user perspective. From Facebook's perspective, they have this awesome new way of keeping people in the Facebook experience more, and they have a way to collect potentially even more data about who we are and what we do all the time.
Right, and so there's a couple of aspects of that. There's first of all, let's actually talk about what the app does, and then let's actually talk about why Facebook wants to do this. The first thing is that this is Android only.
Right.
And the reason why it's Android only,
I don't even know what that drawing's going to look
the
like.
That's the Antilog's distaff cousin. It's the Android only app because it takes over the lock screen and the home screen, which is something Android allows, that Google allows. Let's put it that way. The Google allows through Android out of the box. There are any number of lock screen and home screen skins or apps that you can download from Google Play.
Right.
And you can't do that on iOS. Apple doesn't allow it. Apple owns the lock screen and the home screen.
Right. So doing the exact same thing on iOS just isn't going to happen. And this is more than just a skin, because what it's doing is it's pulling together a lot of different services into that whole Facebook Home interface. So your Facebook messaging, the SMS messages that would otherwise be handled by your text messaging app on your Android phone, those go through this as well. Photographs that your friends are posting to their Facebook feed become the wallpaper image and lock screen image on your phone, and they kind of do the Ken Burns effect, which is neat. And the various things that you would normally do in Facebook are accessible from the one interface and just through simple gestures. And you can have multiple conversations happening at the same time. They can stay persistent on your screen as a series of buttons that are kind of off to the side. And I think they've done a lot to really think through how you would use your phone if it was primarily a social networking device.
Well, I that's a fair assessment, but I do have a slightly different take on it. And that is that I think that they've done a lot of work in figuring out how they want you to use a phone. And I don't know that the way they want me to use a phone is necessarily or at all connected to the way I want to use a phone. Well, it's certainly not connected to the way I want to use a phone.
No. Well, to be fair, neither one of us fits the target market for Facebook Home.
No, probably not. But, you know,
if you're someone that lives in Facebook, like, okay, if you're someone that when you go online, you're not thinking of going on the internet, you're thinking of Facebook. And Facebook becomes your gateway to everything else that you would otherwise access on the internet. That's, I think, the ultimate customer for Facebook Home.
You know, that is true. That is true. I though wonder whether or not even those people effectively want their smartphone to become a Facebook-only device. That's the thing. So Facebook's stated goal is to, what if your smartphone was people-centric instead of app-centric? You know, you have all these apps, and they do disparate things, and you have to go to all these different apps to do these different things. And what if we just brought it all together, but we presented it to you in a people-centric kind of way? Personally, I would rather gouge my eyes out, but whatever.
not sanitary. Don't do it.
It's probably not safe either. This is their idea, and the problem is that while you can get to other Android apps with this thing, you can get to other Android apps. You can run other apps. You have to go about doing it. And I don't know how many people want their smartphone to be Facebook only all the time, because that's essentially what it is. Yes, you can get to other apps, but it's not particularly, you know, easy. Facebook is just right there. You turn it on and you're instantly given status updates from other people. And you know, to me, it seems like Facebook, that a lot of Facebook junkies are more interested in talking about themselves than they are in about reading other people. And that to me is one of the key things that has always seemed to be missing here with this thing is they're presenting to us all these status updates from people.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, man.
I do have a hard time wrapping my head around some of this, simply because you and I are not the target audience for this product. But it has raised questions for me, like how many people, when they open up their iPhone, the first thing they do is look at Twitter or Facebook or app.net or Path or whatever it is. And of those people, how many don't bother to go back to the home screen when they're done looking at that? So whenever they open up their phone again, the first thing they see is that specific app. And I would say if there's a high percentage of people that do that, then Facebook will probably have better success right out the chute than we're expecting.
Yes. I agree. That's the missing piece of information for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. Now, even though I look at this and go, oh man, I really would not want my phone taken over by Facebook like this, I think that they may be onto something and that we will see other services that that take this idea and refine it and give people a way to, in essence, customize their phone. So it can be a social networking phone or their business and stock management phone or their cooking phone or whatever it is, that specialized, focused thing that people are into. I think we may see other companies looking at this now.
Yeah, other companies are going to have they're going to have a real hard time providing the depth of content that Facebook does have.
Yes, but I'm not talking about the depth of content. I'm talking about the whole concept of switching our phones from we're running through a series of apps to do things to we have a very customized interface that shows us the types of things that we're most interested in. And holy crap, I just realized I'm talking about status board.
Yeah, I was wondering if that's – I thought maybe you were subtly trying to get there. And
no,
subtly, I mean, you know, kind of like a freight train driven by a bull through a China shop and a baseball cap. I don't know.
No, the awesome thing is I didn't even realize I was going there until I just said it. And okay, so for the people that don't know what freight train I didn't realize I was just driving until I pulled it into the station, Status Board is a product from Panic Software that was released today, which is Wednesday. And it's for the iPad. And what it does is exactly what I just said. It takes all kinds of information that you are interested in and puts it into a really nice display. And
heavily customizable. Although not as customizable as I spent about 10 minutes with it. It's not quite as customizable as I want it to be.
But that can change from what I gather.
Yeah.
I've intentionally not downloaded it yet because I'm afraid that as soon as I do, it will just consume the rest of my day.
Well, just, you know, do it when we're done recording.
Yes, I'll wait till after we're done
recording. Yeah, it's $9.99, by the way. So if you're going to buy it through the link that we'll put up in the show notes, because it'll be a TMO affiliate link, and you know every penny goes towards improving the site.
Yes, and apparently we'll also go to the cleanup costs of the Antilog on Brian's side of the studio.
Probably. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We didn't anticipate getting into this, but we probably should have planned on it. But one interesting thing about this app is that it's, to my knowledge, it's the first widget app that Apple's approved in a while.
Yes, I think you're right. Because you can really customize this. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, they have a system in place where you can essentially create your own modules. I know there's part of the thing is you can have data online that this references back to.
Yeah, I haven't looked into any aspect of that yet. I only set up some of the stuff that comes with it.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Okay. The point is, here we have an app that does exactly what I was talking about, which is takes the focus from jumping between the apps and puts all the information together into a single app.
The thing about that, Jeff, is that Android has had this for a while. I mean, you know, like if you could use, what's the name of the Panic app again?
Status board.
I have a big block on that. If you could have status board as your lock screen, would you do it right now?
No.
I would.
And I say no because I haven't actually installed it and started using it yet. My knee-jerk reaction for no is, do I want that much information available to anyone that would happen to just grab my phone and hit the home button real fast?
That's true, especially from the standpoint of email, but like, you know, Twitter feed, time, weather, calendar maybe is that might be sensitive. But news feed, and there are of course some other things you can do too, but most of those, like I guess in particular, I would want to have a set of widgets that was customizable for the lock screen.
Okay, now see, that would be really compelling. I have my lock screen set, and then when I unlock my iPad...
Your app set.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I totally agree. And this is something that Android has now. You could do this. There are any number of widget apps. Google Now is effectively a widget app. You know, Google Now is the thing that I've been talking about as being super compelling for Android. And you can do this on Android. You can't do it on iOS. And it's because Apple has been so maniacal about wanting to maintain ownership of that experience, for one thing, for support reasons, but for another thing, for that sort of lowest common denominator reason. Everybody that picks up an iPhone knows what to do with it. And
right,
I think they're going to have to give that up. I really do. I think that this is going to increasingly become a competitive advantage for Android going forward, if you can do it on Android devices and you can't do it on Apple's devices.
I'm going to temper what you said a little bit, because you said Apple's going to have to do this. And I could see Apple finding an interesting halfway point where they control the framework that we plug modules into, and maybe even have some control over what type of modules can be made.
That actually would be acceptable to me. That would be acceptable to me as a user. I would be very fine with that. But I would like more information available to me, more smart, intelligent information available to me from at least the lock screen, preferably both the home screen and the lock screen.
You know, I could see where once I go ahead and accept the fact that I'm going to lose all kinds of productivity time and download status board, mm-hmm. where it becomes one of the apps that takes a coveted spot on my home screen. And depending on what I'm doing, I could see where I may actually have an app that when I'm done using my iPad, instead of hitting the home button, which I always do, I just leave it on status board. So the next time I unlock my iPad, that information's right there again.
Right.
And that, right. That's a huge change for me in the way I would be using my iPad.
Sure. Oh, sure. Yeah, for all of us, I think that would be. So, I don't know. It's interesting. Back to Facebook Home, I think... Well, let's look at that other thing that I mentioned, and that's why Facebook wants to do this. Facebook makes its money by profiling us the same way that Google does.
Yes, we are the product.
We are the product.
That's being sold.
Right, that's being sold, that they are profiting from. They profile us, both these companies profile us, they learn everything that they can about us, and they slice and dice that information, and then they sell us to the highest advertiser.
Right, and which brings up an important point. Mark Zuckerberg said that even though Facebook Home does not have ads right now, it definitely will.
Oh, it's just going to be glorious.
That's going to be three buckets of awesome. And by three buckets of awesome, I mean ew.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Ads on my lock screen. Thanks. What Facebook is worried about is the shift to mobile computing that's happening. You know, what Apple calls the post-PC world, to which I say post-PC world, my ass. and that's mainly, of course, from a content creation standpoint, because they're right from a consumption standpoint. We're heading towards this post-PC world that lots of people are getting their Facebook right now from mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And Facebook is worried that it doesn't have as much access to information on both iPhone and Android. And that's why they've developed this product. They've developed this product because they want to be able to sit in between the user and everything that the user does so that they have more information to slice and dice and sell.
Right.
So, the hooray for them. And kind of the point I was making earlier is that I think that they've confused what's good for Facebook for what I actually want. But, you know, Dave Hamilton made a very good point when he said that today there are lots of people for, and you were also echoing this point, lots of people for whom Facebook is the internet in the same way that AOL once upon a time was the internet.
Right, right.
So, I don't know. You guys may be right. I'm going to wait to be shown the proof of that. You know, I'm sure that Facebook, this gets released on, what is it? So Friday it gets released on the 12th.
Yes, April 12th.
And I'm sure that Facebook is going to immediately announce a gajillion downloads. What I don't think we're going to hear anytime soon is usage data.
Probably not. And I'm betting they don't want to share that usage data because it may play in to competitive advertising something.
I think if they actually have really high usage, that would be the reason to brag about it. Because they're going to want everybody to know that, you know, let's you know, 100 million people or 200 million people or, you know, something like that are spending 3 hours a day with Facebook Home. You know, if that happens, they're going to want everybody on the planet to know about it. I'll be surprised if we actually see any kind of, I'll be surprised if we see that.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be seeing that. My guess is that as tech journalism bloggers get their hands on Facebook Home, many of them are just going to totally bag on it.
Yeah, but that's the echo chamber.
Yes, I know.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate against myself. These are the same people that aren't just like us, that we're not the target market. And I don't think what you and I say about this or what any other tech blogger is going to say about Facebook Home is actually going to change the way people use or don't use it.
And it's like you read my mind. That's exactly where I was going. The average user that Facebook Home will appeal to is someone they don't care what we say because we don't use it. We can't grok it the way they do.
Right.
Yeah. And, right. But then the next thing that happens is that, after everyone's done bagging on Facebook Home, then they start saying, oh, but now Apple's going to have to do something like this because they've fallen behind. And so then we'll see talk about how if Apple doesn't allow it on iOS or it doesn't come up with their own version, that they're doomed. Doomed, I say.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right, so that's Facebook Home. Now we have the flip side of the die. What?
Yes, the two-sided die.
Right, the flip side of the two-sided die. And that would be...
That would be...
The app usage.
Yes.
I have had a blank on that all day. It's ridiculous.
It's okay. You couldn't remember status board either.
I couldn't, no.
And you bought it only hours ago.
It's true. Immediately. I bought it while we were still in our morning conference call. So what we're talking about was... A new report from Canalis or Canalis. I have no idea.
I would say Canalis.
Canalis makes more sense.
It sounds like they can charge more if it's Canalis.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And they released a report that claimed that Apple had 74% of app revenues in the top 50 markets during the March quarter. And
holy crap.
Yeah, 74% of app revenues. Now we've known this for a long time. Apple has always had the lion's share of app revenues. But I mean, the thing is, wait, another data point too. For the first time, Google Play had 51% of app downloads.
Okay.
Okay.
That's significant.
And then Microsoft's and BlackBerry's thing. I mean, they're, you know, might as well not have even been there, but you know, they were mentioned in the report too. But basically, Apple was a close second, but they didn't specify what Apple actually was. But here's the thing: for 2 years now, you know, 2.5 years, Google has been outselling Apple, outselling iPhone somewhere between 3 and 4 to 1, quarter after quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there are many, many more Android devices out there in the wild now. Many more than there are iPhones.
Right.
What are people doing with them? What are people doing with these? How is it? I mean, okay, fine. Android users are cheap. They don't want to pay for anything. And so they buy a bunch of free ad-supported apps. Okay,
sure.
We've known that. That's fine. But for Google Play to only have 51% of app downloads, I mean, Android users are not downloading apps, let alone using them. We keep getting data point after data point. Sales. You know, was iPad had like 91% of tablet of purchases made from tablets on Black Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Right, 91%, you know, despite the fact that Apple's market share has decreased from like, you know, 80% down to closer to 50%, I think, in the December quarter. You know, so there are still probably more iPads out in the wild. Actually, there are definitely more iPads out in the wild. But 91% of tablet based sales, or 95, it was over 90%. It was huge.
Yeah, it was a crazy number.
You know, we get all the various web traffic reports that come out always show iPhone and iPad with these vastly disproportionate usage.
Marks. Like 90%.
What was it? Tim Cook said.
Okay. The figure I remember is at the iPhone 5 launch announcement. He said that the iPad was 68% of the tablet market, but 91% of the online traffic for tablets.
Right. I think that's where I got the 91. I think that the Black Friday sales were even higher. I think it was like 94 or something for Black Friday sales.
Either way, it was like 3 metric bucket loads.
Yeah. And it's just every single data point that comes out, every single metric that comes out says that Android owners aren't doing anything with their phones. At least they're not doing any web stuff. They're not doing any apps. They're not buying for apps. They're certainly not paying for apps. They're not doing anything with these devices. Why is that? It drives me nuts because I don't understand it.
Yeah. I don't know, really. It's weird that the numbers would be so skewed like they are. And I have to wonder as well, what is being done with the Android tablets that and smartphones that are going out into the world? Because the numbers are showing they're not getting used. So... But I can see people in Starbucks every day when I go in on Android phones or using a Kindle HD.
Yeah, and they're actually using Kindle Fire.
Sure, they're on Facebook or texting or reading a book.
What's the percentage? You know, because usually if it's a tablet or smartphone around here in the Bay Area, it's usually going to be an Apple device.
The majority that I see. Our iPhones and iPads. But keep in mind that I'm here right now, where I am, it's a tourist town. So the overall...
You're in the mountains of Colorado.
Yeah, I'm in the mountains of Colorado. And so right now, we don't have as much diversity as we normally do. During the tourist season, so spring through fall, it's iPhones everywhere. When it's just the locals, you see more of a mix of Android in with that. But it's still Apple's game,
which is weird because you know iPhone's been at between 15-20% of the market of the smartphone market for a long time. And for, again, the last couple of years, Android's been at, 70-90%. And, no, that's not 90%, 70-80%. Yeah, 70-80%.
That sounds better.
And, I don't know, Tim Cook, I've got that quote. He said that, Tim Cook said, I don't know what these other tablets are doing. They must be in warehouses or store shelves or somebody's bottom drawer. And I know that part of it is lifespan. You know, there's a lot of cheap, free Android devices with a contract, right? And, you know, it turns out when something's cheap and free, it probably isn't going to get used as long because, you know, it was cheap and free. And part of it is that, you know, the really cheap ones don't have good specs. They're not actually good devices. I would assume that... For instance, the owners of the Galaxy S3 and the Galaxy Note 2, that a much higher percentage of those device owners are actively using their devices than the rest of the Android market.
Now, knowing we have no data to back that up.
Yeah, it's just a gut opinion.
I'm inclined to think you're right.
I do have some anecdotal evidence. I've got friends who had some earlier devices, and they just never used them for anything. Mm-hmm. And one of them got an S3, and one of them got a Note 2, and they both used – they probably use those devices 20 times more than I ever saw them using the old ones. But that's strictly anecdotal, but it's definitely – it's informing my opinion. But I think it's probably reasonable. I think if you're going to put the investment of spending a little extra money, you're going to have a device with a nice big screen. You're probably going to use it more than the guy who's got the free crappy device with the crappy screen.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm going to throw a small wrench in there with my anecdotal information, which is that I have known a handful of people that got a Galaxy S3, mm-hmm. and of those people, I believe none of them have them anymore.
Oh,
and
really?
Most of them got rid of them within the first month because they got tired of having to have them swapped out for hardware failure.
Really?
Yes. And they all went over to Motorola Droids.
And did they keep them and use them?
And they keep and use their droids.
Well, that's interesting because Motorola has diddly squat for market share and is losing money hand over fist.
Right.
And Samsung is definitely selling. That may be a blip. That's probably a blip.
Yes. It's just one of those interesting blips that that surrounded me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. It's the nature of anecdotal evidence. The friends that I have could also be a blip. But
the numbers tend to support what you're saying more.
Yeah, probably. So I don't know. It's just really interesting. Oh, you know, and another factor too is like if you look at the ComScore data. By the way, anyone who uses ComScore subscriber data to talk about U.S. market share is someone you can safely ignore because they're misreading the data. ComScore's data is not market share, it's subscriber share, which is the percentage of devices that are used by active subscribers on the major U.S. carriers. And that data has nothing to do with market share, it has to do with device usage. So Apple has been like trending for, you know, quarter after quarter, Apple has been trending up in subscriber share in the U.S., but that just isn't tied to market share because market share is a measure of devices, new devices that are sold, or at least that's what people usually mean when they're talking about market share.
Right. So I'm glad you brought that up because that's an important distinction. And I have a feeling because of the way the numbers are used in some articles that it's something that a lot of our listeners may not have been aware of.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it gets misused. I saw it today, an article by Dan Farber, who should know better, used it to refer to sales, and it's just ridiculous. But anyway, that's beside the point. One reason why Apple's subscriber share continually grows is because Apple devices get used for so much longer. Even when someone trades up and they buy a new one, they're selling their old devices to Gazelle or they're giving them to a family member. You know, there are still iPhone 3GSs, probably 3Gs, that are still in use.
I know there are iPhone 3Gs that are still in use.
Here in the U.S., not just overseas.
Yeah. I had an iPhone 3G that just sat in a drawer for quite a while, and I had a friend that needed a phone, and so off it went. And that one I actually unlocked, and it ended up on T-Mobile's network. And then my iPhone 4 went, or maybe my iPhone 4 got unlocked. It doesn't matter. So, yeah, iPhone 3 and iPhone 4, both of those I sent off to other people so that they could use.
Yeah, Apple still sells the iPhone 4. That's the one you get for free with a 2-year subscription from most of the major carriers.
Actually, right.
Not most of the major carriers, Verizon and AT&T.
AT&T.
And they still sell the 4S as well. So, you know, the 4 is not quite 2 years old. 4S is a year and a half old, and the 5, of course, is 6 months old. But the point is that Apple devices get used a lot longer, just like Macs. Macs get used a lot longer. The lifespan of a Mac is years longer than the lifespan of a typical PC. Certainly the useful lifespan, but that's another issue. And so that's one reason why Apple subscriber share does so well. And I think that this contributes to this usage thing. We have all these devices that are being used, but they don't get used for very long. And they weren't used very much in the first place, but then they get thrown away. They're not being handed down. No one wants it. No one wants to buy it. You know, no one's going to buy an original Galaxy. No one's going to buy I don't know. I would be shocked if you could get more, if you could get someone to give you $10 for a 2-year-old Android device. I'd be shocked. If anyone has any anecdotal information on there, I'd love to hear it. ACM@MacObserver.com.
you know, the 2-year-old Android devices I've seen, no one would want to buy anyhow because they're just banged up really bad. They're taped together, cracked or broken screens.
Yeah. They were cheap devices to begin with.
Yeah. And a cell phone goes through a lot of abuse.
Yeah, it does. So I just don't get it. I get so obsessed with things that I don't understand. And this is one of those things that I don't understand. I don't understand what people are doing with these Android devices that are out there. Now, if you happen to be the guy that spends 10 hours a day on your device and you're listening to this, or you know that guy who is, that is also the blip, because this data is just consistent. For years, it's been consistent. For years, any kind of usage metrics that have come out have shown that people aren't doing anything with their Android devices, or they're not doing as much. They're certainly not doing as much as iPhone and iPad owners are doing.
Right. And it's baffling. And actually, this is one of the reasons when we started talking about, hey, should this be a topic? And I was all excited about it. It's because I know how much this frustrates you.
It's not even a frustration. It frustrates me not to know.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah, it's not the fact that it happens that frustrates me, just for clarity's sake.
Yeah, it's the lack of information that's frustrating you. And so I just felt compelled to bring your misfortune out into the public for everyone to witness.
Speaking of misfortune, you know, I think that's such a fantastic segue point.
Yes.
This is for once it's actually a good segue. Ron Johnson got canned yesterday. Was that yesterday or the day before?
That was 2 days ago now.
2 days ago.
And
Monday. Yeah. You're right. It was Monday.
Yeah. When you said that was just wonderful.
Thank you.
And yeah. So Ron Johnson got fired on Monday from JCPenney.
JCPenney.
And for people that don't know who he was the head of Apple retail, and he came from Target. And so he's the guy that is to a substantial degree responsible for the success of Apple's retail.
Yeah, he and Steve Jobs created the original Apple Store experience.
Right. And so then he ends up getting a new job as the CEO of JCPenney. So JCPenney fires their CEO at the time, who was
Michael Ullman.
Michael Ullman?
Yeah, I think his first name was actually Myron, but he gets called Mike.
Okay, so Mike Ullman. And so he gets fired. JCPenney hires Ron Johnson away from Apple to be the new CEO and breathe new life into the company. And then he got fired on Monday for apparently not breathing that life in. And salt in the wound, guess who the new CEO is?
Mike Ullman.
Mike Ullman.
Yeah, so the thing that Ron Johnson was trying to do over at JCPenney, and the thing that I'm sure attracted him away from Apple, where he was making a bajillion dollars and his stock options were worth a bajillion dollars, the thing I'm sure that was the major attraction for him was the ability to completely reshape the shopping experience for a major chain.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, like one of the first things he did is he cut out sales for which JCPenney was known. JCPenney's customer base tended to be middle-class folks. And this was a segment of the market that was especially hurt by the economic downturn. And it was still hurting when Ron Johnson was hired, and it turns out that those folks were pretty interested in those sales.
And the sales, JCPenney's being known for the place you go to get something on sale. That was one of Ullman's things.
Yeah, that was one of for sure. Yeah, it hurt profitability, in the long run, especially as sale as overall revenue was decreasing, and that's why they brought Ron in. And so Ron acknowledged that he made some mistakes, but one of the things he was doing is he was building stores within a store, trying to make a great experience for shoppers, and that was supposedly gaining traction, but JCPenney was losing money hand over fist.
Now, the question I have is, did they wait long enough before firing him, or did he just need to go?
I think that they needed to suck it up and take another couple of years of losses. If they wanted a true springboard to bounce back from, the Ron Johnson's vision of the future was probably a great vision for them.
Yeah, and well, and we won't know now because he's gone. The other question I have, I know I said I had one question, and now I have two. If Ullman was so bad for the company that he had to be fired, why is he suddenly so great for the company that he needs to be hired?
Yeah, I think that's why. Actually, let me check JCPenney's stock for today. But it's funny, when it was announced that Ron was fired, the stock went up 10% in after hours trading. When it was announced that Ullman was being brought back, the stock went down again. It gave up all of those gains and then gave up another 10%. So it looks like on Monday, the stock was trading at $15.70, $15.80 a share. It dropped immediately afterwards. It dropped down to below $14.50. It's still, and it's trading right now at $14.09. It's up 16 cents today, but, you know, whatever. Yeah, so yeah. The point is the Wall Street is not looking favorably on bringing the guy back that screwed things up in the first place.
Yeah, that just seems so JCPenney. I was trying to think of another company to compare that to, and the only thing I could think of is, geez, if Palm had realized they could do that, they probably would have, because they did everything they could unintentionally to destroy their business. And HP under Apotheker tried to do everything it could to destroy its business.
Yep.
So
yeah. So I think that the real question with Ron Johnson and the way, because I'm sure this is going to be studied in business schools at some point, because the success of Apple's retail stores is storied. Obviously, it's huge. You know, it's a big deal, and for Ron Johnson to go from success at rebuilding Target and rebranding Target to the phenomenal success of the Apple stores to this fantabulous failure at JCPenney's. JCPenney, I'm sure that's going to be studied. But my point is this. I think that when history looks back at this, the real question is going to be, give up too early, or was JCPenney the wrong place for Ron Johnson to try what he was trying to do in the first place? And I think that actually may be the real issue here. His vision, yeah, of rebuilding department stores. Because his whole thing is like, you know, for department stores to stay relevant, we have to reinvent this process. We have to reinvent the experience. That was his deal. And I think he's entirely right. Macy's has had enormous success rebuilding themselves. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, Ron Johnson has a track record of making this work. He rebuilt Target. And then, well, he started from scratch with Apple, so he didn't have to rebuild that. But he's done it twice very successfully.
He definitely reinvented the computer shopping experience.
Oh yes, I agree.
But he was able to do it from a ground up standpoint rather than having to reshape something. And,
right.
And I think he was right about the department stores. So, And like I said, JCPenney should have either they should have stuck with him for two more years, or they should have canned him, like, you know, 6 months ago. That's probably the real thing. If they weren't going to give it a shot, they shouldn't have given it a shot as long as they did.
I'm going to be a little more radical and say either they should have given him two more years or never hired him in the first place.
Yeah, I like that even better. So the question is, what happens to Ron Johnson now? Could he come back to Apple?
Well, anything could happen, but my Jedi instincts tell me no.
Why?
I think that Apple probably... Well, okay, now I'm getting all wishy-washy on myself. Okay, if Steve Jobs was running Apple, no. I don't think Ron Johnson would get to come back.
Why, though?
Because Steve was a fickle man, and Ron defected to another company.
Yeah, Ron defected to another company. But Ron stayed for months at Apple to get... To basically make sure the transition was smooth.
Yeah.
And if Steve was all pissed, that wouldn't have happened.
That's true. Nonetheless, Steve was a fickle man.
He's also gone.
And he's also gone, which is why I suddenly became wishy-washy, because I realized, wait a second, it's not Steve Jobs running Apple. It's Tim Cook running Apple. So what Tim will have to look at, assuming this is something that would even be on the table, first, does he want Ron back? Does he think Ron is capable of picking up and carrying Apple's retail experience forward in a productive way? If he's brought back, what impact does that have on Apple's public image?
It would probably... I don't know. I don't think it would be bad for Apple's public image. However, I think the real question about Apple is whether or not Tim is wanting to reinvent its reinvented shopping experience. Because... I think that's what Ron Johnson likes to do. He likes to rebuild, and he likes to reshape, and he likes to create new value. And I think that's probably the only reason why he left Apple in the first place is
his job was done.
His job was done, yeah.
So in that case, would Ron want to come back?
I doubt that, to be honest. I doubt that. I don't know that Apple particularly needs him. I don't know that he would want to come back. I wonder what he will do. I wonder how much the Ron Johnson brand has been tarnished. And there's actually a significant chance that it was not tarnished all that badly because of the mess that JCPenney was in the first place. And the fact that some of the things that he did have been getting very positive buzz and positive customer reaction.
Right. And then add to that the way he was very quickly let go and replaced with the person he replaced. And that doesn't look good for JCPenney. Mm-hmm. So I could see where other corporations would look at Ron and go, yeah, wow, that was a pretty crappy deal you were given. Boy, whew, lucky you're out of penny.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, what would Ron Johnson do at Nordstrom, or what would he do, you know, at the JCPenney end of the spectrum? What would he do with Sears?
Yeah, and well, my guess is if Sears is run the way JCPenney is run, he'd hang out for a couple years until they got tired of waiting for his long term plans to pan out.
Right, but yeah, right, and Sears and JCPenney are, I mean, they're not really analogous, but I think they do occupy more of the same end of the department store spectrum,
sure,
compared to say Macy's and Nordstrom,
sure.
So I don't know. It's interesting. It is interesting. It's, you know, for someone for someone who did leave, it's also interesting that very few top Apple executives have had success outside of Apple.
That's true. The first one that comes to mind that had really good success outside of Apple would be Steve Jobs.
Well, yes, it's true. He did with Pixar, but...
With Pixar.
Pixar was more like success despite Steve. You know, I mean, Steve definitely... I mean, John Lasseter and the other guy, golly, whose name I can't remember, who had the vision to make the Pixar movies. Some of what they did, they kind of did behind Steve's back, and then Steve recognized the genius and backed it and made it work. But the other part, you know, Next was largely a failure.
Yes, it was successful in that it was the right acquisition for Apple to make, but in and of itself, yeah, they never sold many Next Cubes, and it never really was.
It was largely a
mainstream.
Failure.
Yeah,
it was largely.
Although that failure was the foundation for the World Wide Web. Because that's what Tim Berners-Lee used.
I can't really call that, though. Tim Berners...
No, that's just an awesome little bit of trivia.
No, it is. But you can't call it the foundation of the web. He built...
Yes, I can.
He built his first... He built the HTTP protocol on an Xbox.
Foundation.
But it could have been... He wasn't building it with like NextOS tools. That was just the computer that he liked to use.
Look, don't mess up my awesome story with facts, okay?
My apologies.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, Eddie Q has had some success at Nest, but Nest is a much smaller. I mean, you know, it's a much smaller company,
right?
Than JCPenney or Palm. Where John Rubenstein did not have success.
No.
I mean, and, you know, like I said, very few Apple executives have done well outside of Apple. And which is extra interesting in that I know that at the lower levels, it is well known amongst Apple employees that a way to get a promotion at Apple is to quit Apple, go work somewhere else, and then come back at a higher position. But the top Apple executives don't tend to come back, which kind of speaks to your point originally about Ron Johnson.
So back to my original answer about Ron. No.
Yeah, fair enough. And with that, man, we're already going long.
Yeah, and just to think, we were wondering if we'd have enough content, and of course, we always have enough content.
Yeah, that's true. We could talk.
Boy, howdy. All right. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter or app.net. My name on both is Jay Gamut.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y. On app.net, I am Brian Chaffin. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.